Hi, welcome to Conversations on Public Health. I'm your host, Prachi. Join me every week as I travel across India, speaking to folks who are solving massive public health challenges facing our country and the larger developing world. Today we discuss a topic that public health professionals often grapple with. How do we create effective and convincing messages for the community? Our guest today is Ananya Roy. Ananya is a documentary filmmaker with a wide portfolio that has found viewership on Netflix, YouTube, and various film festivals throughout the world. Hi, Ananya. Very welcome to our show.
Hi, thanks for having me here.
So very often, you know, when we look at public health communication, especially when it's targeted to the community, a lot of the content tends to be pictorial or on posters or in some kind of pamphlets. Also in video.
Right.
But, you know, as the world moves towards more video-based content, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how you see that going.
Right. So I think one thing about video-based content everywhere, irrespective of language or, you know, the audience that you're speaking to, it's very universal. People respond well and have always responded well throughout history to audiovisual content, right? So it makes for, it's a very good storytelling tool, and it helps you sort of communicate often pretty complex ideas in a very succinct manner. It's demonstrative, it can be participatory, you can even have interactive content. So the world of video really sort of opens up and democratizes the reach of your content in terms of, especially if you're speaking to rural communities who might not be often literate, who might not have access to, you know, say even smartphones or any other form of social media. I think videos in a country like India especially, right? If you look at it, people go to the movies or people watch TV serials more than they do anything else, right? So that's always been the case. So we do have a demographic that is already sort of tuned to consuming content when it comes to video. Mm-hmm. It is also something that allows you to tell more complex layered stories in the manner which is entertaining and palatable. And honestly, when it comes to the power of recall and retention, that's something that if you just sort of any amount of research and just general, if you think about how we also respond to video content, right? You're more likely to remember a scene from a film or a serial or even a PSA than you are to, you know, maybe a print ad that you read somewhere on an average. So I think that's why it's important to factor in video-based communication when it comes to especially public health and community-facing content, because oftentimes also the content is dry, right? If you're talking to someone, say, about nutrition, right? Or if you're talking to someone about vaccination schedules or any of those things, it can come across as dry and uninteresting for the, you know, the general public. Now, what video can help you do is communicate all of those points, communicate the key message, probably in a manner which is a little more entertaining and palatable for them and also sticks with them in their heads.
Coming now to creating content like this, mm-hmm. What goes into the process of you sort of like ensuring that the content you create serves the purpose that it's meant to do? Like, what about things like access? How do you decide what exactly is it that you want to put out? How does that work?
Okay, I think with any kind of, content, right? Whether in any form of video-based content, research is the first step, right? If you're doing anything which is in the public-facing field or if you're doing anything which is in the non-fiction space, you really need to do your homework. So the first step is always research, and that research involves multiple things. So you have to talk to experts in the field for their medical opinions, to policymakers for their understanding of the infrastructure, to basically people who are operating on the high level of how public health sector works in India, right? So given the example of public health. The second would be research when it comes to actual field research. And by field research, I mean talking to people in the ecosystem who are on the ground and working in the last mile, communicating directly to your end user, which is the regular person, right? Which is your end user in this case is a villager or somebody who lives in a tier 2 city or even somebody who lives in a city. So it's the viewer at the end of the day. So you also have to do your research in having actual conversations and understanding how the last mile delivery of these elements, right? Whether it's, you know, public health communication or whether it's, you know, vaccination or maternal health or whatever topic you're covering, you need to speak to the last mile delivery guy. And this thirdly, you need to speak to the people, right? So if, for example, you take the example of campaigning for more hospital beds in a in an area of, say, Rajasthan, where hospital births are not common, right? So once you've spoken to the other two stakeholders, you actually have to go speak to that woman who lives in the village and ask her, why have your grandmother and your mother never had an hospital birth, even though it was available, right? You are now with child. Do you plan to have a hospital birth? If yes, why? Why has your mind been changed about it? If no, what's stopping you, right? What are your conditions like? What is your family, you know, situation like? What do you really want for your child? You know, how much would you, how would you want to protect yourself and your unborn baby and make sure you have a you know, a clean, proper birth? What are your actual obstacles? So for example, if a woman has to like walk 3 miles when she's pregnant to gather water anyway, then that's a problem that needs to be solved, right? Or that's, you need to factor that in. If a woman's diet because of her region or like religion doesn't provide her with enough certain nutrients that are needed when a woman is pregnant, you need to understand that and then communicate effectively, keeping that in mind.
Right. So these are very sensitive questions then that you might be asking your subjects.
Right.
How do you go about that?
So, yeah, you're absolutely right. These are very sensitive questions that you often have to pose to people that you're meeting. I think it's imperative that in your research phase, right, when you're informing yourself about the community you're going into or the subject matter you're delving into, that you keep a very sort of balanced perspective, right? Often we tend to impose our own pre-existing, premeditated opinions on how we think, you know, we're going to perceive something or how a community actually lives or what we think we know about them. At some level, after you've done your research, when you actually go into the community and interact with people, you have to let go of your conceptions a little bit, right? And you have to make sure that A, you're respectful, you're sensitive to the other person's need. And honestly, when you're doing this kind of research, or even if you're doing interviews, you need to remember that you have to speak to them the same way as you would to a friend to whom you're asking a personal question, right? So these are relationships of trust that have to develop. Because if someone tomorrow came to you and asked you, hey, why do you eat meat, right? Or why do you not eat meat, right? Or, you know, does your mother-in-law treat you well? And those are sensitive questions, right? So if you have to be prepared to answer that, you need to trust the person who's asking those questions. You need to feel safe. So you have to ensure you create a safe space for people to talk about these things, that you don't tread on people's boundaries. And most importantly, that you have their consent and their understanding that they're having the conversation that they're having, right? So, you know, for a lot of us who are brought up in cities, it really does take a little while to sort of, you know, shed our preconceived notions, to shed the whole sort of, you know, the personas that we come with, and just be real with people and be genuine and cultivate them, those relationships, as we would cultivate any other relationships of importance.
Right. Very often, you know, when you're doing this kind of research and asking these kind of questions, you might be stuck in a place where there's just not enough space. There might be a lot of people around you. You may not get, you know, a room to sort of ask these very sensitive questions in.
Right.
How do you work around these logistical issues?
So it's you're absolutely right. And it's something very interesting, for example, what I've noticed, right? When you speak to women in a lot of rural areas, they don't want to speak when their husbands are around. Or they don't want to speak when, for example, other members of their family or even their community are around, because they don't want to be judged, right? And they don't want it to become like village gossip, so, or something like that. So it takes a little bit of, I think, like I said, sensitivity and inventiveness. So, for example, you go in the afternoon when everybody else is out and it's just the woman and her baby in the house, right? Or you go talk to the man when he's working on the field, so, and he's not around people who he doesn't want overhearing this conversation. Sometimes people don't want you to record their conversation. In the research phase, that's absolutely fine, right? They don't want to give their name to be revealed. They don't want to reveal their faces. So you either don't record on video or you just take things down on text when you're doing the research part of it. That's fine. So you have to sort of, you know, adapt to the situation and see, like you said, in terms of what is the most comfortable space for this person to speak. And if that means that, you know, you have to go at 6 a.m. and speak to someone in the middle of the field, then so be it, right? And that's talking about like when you're researching, when you're actually filming content, if it involves interviews and things like that. Again, like I said, you have to make sure that the person is in a space where they feel safe enough to have that conversation with you, whether it's their, you know, their living room, their courtyard, or like somebody else's house in the village where they feel safe. And if they don't want their faces to be revealed, you absolutely do not do that, right? So if they don't want to their identity to be revealed, you absolutely do not do that. So I think, like I said, it's something that you learn on the job while you're doing it, and you're figure it out. There's always a way. It just depends on who you're with and where you are at.
Right. And how do you, once you have this content or once you have this research and you go back to, let's say, your edit table or, you know, back to your studio, what is the process like?
Okay, so sort of just go back a few steps. So once you have the research, right, there are multiple ways of of video communication in public health, right? So one is which is pure information based, where ideally you would have like a doctor or a health worker or somebody from the medical community or the public health community talking about a topic that they're informed on to inform like the public about it, right? Saying, for example, okay, here's the polio vaccination schedule, this is why you should get your child vaccinated, and this is how you do it, right? That's one form. The other is more storytelling oriented. So if you I actually forget the name of the campaign, but there was a series on DD that came out where, you know, it was talking about maternal health, and it was talking about, like, you know, good practices when it comes to maternal health. And it was set in the form of a serial in a rural village in Rajasthan. And things were communicated through the story of the mother, the mother-in-law, the daughter, and, the, and you know, the, her sisters-in-law, right? So you, so those are different ways of communicating. So once you're done with the research, you figure what you need to say and how you need to say it, right? So what kind of communication are you putting out? Are you just putting out information? Or are you telling stories to sort of draw people in? And side implied in that, you also sort of create awareness content. So for example, the West Bengal government quite a few years back ran this campaign called the Buladi campaign, which is basically an HIV/AIDS awareness campaign. What it featured was, it was a claymation animation. It had this puppet character called Buladi, which is like a neighborhood auntie character, and she was actually talking to people about sexual health and reproductive health and just something like safe sex, use a condom, you know, get tested, stay clean, all of these things. And it was communicated in a form where it is very colloquial, it is very relevant to, you know, the audience that they had in mind. And it was in the form of these snippets where like people used euphemisms. So for example, there was one ad which came out which said in Bengali, oh, you're going to play Ludo, make sure you know you're safe. So Ludo is basically euphemism for sex, right? So they put that research in and they made the effort to communicate in a way that was going to stay with the audience. And I mean, I remember that, it's from like 10 years ago, right? So for example, I worked on a series of public health videos, which are, there were two kinds of videos, one set targeted at health workers for their training and one set targeted at the community to inform them, all on the same topic, anemia in pregnancy and how do you A, prevent it, B, if somebody has it, how do you deal with it, what are, and why is it important to do so, right? Yeah. So that was the overall brief. Now, when it came to the health worker facing content, it was done in the form of a qualified doctor who was from a public health background, telling the health worker everything they needed to know, technical information, how, like, what level of hemoglobin is severe anemia, what level of hemoglobin is, like, you know, mild anemia, when do you take them to the referral center, when do you inform your, like, doctor, how, what do you recommend to the patient, do you give them folic acid, do you send them for a blood transfusion, so that kind of communication. Whereas the communication targeted at the community was in, it was, because it was piloted in Karnataka in the specific case, it was in Kannada, so that language was the right thing, because often dubbing and doesn't work, right? It helps to have language in the
context.
Yeah, exactly. For example, for that, we did a lot of research in understanding what kind of content would appeal, right? What does an actual household in North Karnataka, in like, or South Karnataka look like, right?
Right.
So what are the interpersonal relationships like? What do they watch? What kind of serials do they like? So,
you know, like, one thing I've seen is that a lot of content is very direct. It's very, very clear to understand. But it's not very convincing.
That's right. Because I think, like I said, it completely depends on your audience and what response you get out of them. So, for example, to take this, you know, to put this in context, the health worker here is already a captive audience, right? They're there to be trained. They want to know more. So you can go as much into information and specifics and technicalities, and you need to, because they're being trained as health workers, right? Whereas when you're talking to the community, right, you have there a young probably between the ages of like 18 and 25 mother who maybe is a first-time mother and doesn't know what to do, right? You have a husband who's probably clueless about, you know, what he can do to sort of help this process, or might even be resistant, or even if he doesn't want to help, he doesn't know how to do it. You have a family structure which is often complex in many ways, right? So you have to be able to understand what appeals to people. This is the same way as you make any kind of content, right? Tomorrow, if you want to write a book targeted at children and you want them to care about preserving tigers, right, and the tiger population, you will make sure you find out what kids between the age of 5 and 14 like, and you're going to relay that information. Even if it is about tigers and saving tiger population, you will make it, make sure you'll make sure it's palatable to your target audience, and they will end up caring about it, right? So it doesn't help to be blind to your, you know, the audience's preferences and their emotions and what appeals to them. So for example, in this case, we created characters of, there was a very jovial, very, very likable Asha worker character, right? There was a young bride, a young mother who was being a mother for the first time, who was the anemic mother. And she was somebody who, any of us, if you watch it, you know, you will want her to do well. You will want her to be healthy, right? There was the mother-in-law character who actually cared about the daughter-in-law and her health, because we want to cultivate that kind of behavior, right? We want to be there, to be harmonious, you know, structures in the family unit like that, right? And obviously there was an antagonist also in this case, which was the neighbor who was against all these, what she calls the new age practices, like taking folic acid tablets, and who preferred to believe in, like, you know, archaic practices and be like, you know, in our day we never had IFA tablets, I gave birth to 5 sons, which is actually real things that people say, right? So you have to draw from real life. And we sitting in the city here often don't have any idea about what that is, right? For example, when we went to the village to do our research, we found out, like, there are myths like you're not supposed to drink too much water when you're pregnant because apparently it will give the baby a cold, myth, right? So we had to insert that into the storytelling and made sure that myth was busted, but in a way that doesn't diss your audience or make them feel dumb.
That's respectful.
Correct. Because anybody, if somebody disrespects you, you're not going to want to listen to what they have to say, right? You're immediately going to tune off, saying like, okay, yeah, they're being disrespectful, why should I listen to them? So it's very important to understand this. As much as you have to hit key points in terms of what you're communicating, the manner in which you do so is also very important, right? So it needs to be appealing, it needs to be respectful, it needs to keep in mind the audience, you know, how the audience would react to it. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, it can't be too complicated. It has to be also sort of distilled in a way that is easy for people to connect to and remember.
Right. Do you think that the content that we end up creating for IC,
mm-hmm,
and like educational content in general, do you think it underestimates the audience very often?
I think that's off the top of my head, I think over the last, like, especially the decade, I think there's been a huge change in the kind of content that, you know, slowly is coming out, right? I think there are a lot of good people who work towards trying making that content as specific and as palatable and as interesting as possible. But I think there is always room for improvement, honestly. And I think it has more to do with the fact that there are so many issues to address, right? If you look at it in a country like India, there are so many things to address when it comes to communication. So I think sometimes we also get lost in that sea of topics that need to be addressed, because it's not an easy ask of the stakeholders, of the people who are creating this content, because you're literally starting at a level where there are 100 issues to solve, right? So I think it helps to try and be, like, you know, as specific and as simple as you can with your approach, and at the same time try and treat your audience with the base understanding that no matter where your audience is or who they are, what a demographic is, people still need to be hooked, right? You, for somebody to give you their time, even if it's 5 seconds or 5 minutes of their time, they have to have solid reason to do so. So to answer your question, do you think we underestimate it? I think we do sometimes. And I think that sometimes, you know, is counterproductive. But it's a complex problem to solve. Like, you have to be simple and effective and not take much time. At the same time, you have to figure out how to cater to people. So I would say it's an ongoing problem. Right. Yeah.
Do you think government communication, or just information and educational content, sometimes I feel like they often starts from a place of disadvantage, because many of us just mentally block that out. We don't let that in.
Absolutely. I think it's just an unfortunate preconception that sits in our heads. That the moment we think, or the moment we see UGC or government, we're like, oh, it's going to be boring. I don't want to hear about it. And that's true of of every demographic in India, right? Nowadays, everybody has smartphones, everybody has cable. Why would you want to sit and watch, you know, appease the government?
Like a two-minute government ad on...
anything, right?
Yeah.
Like whether it's like polio or anemia or like reproductive health. Why will you watch that when there are like YouTube videos to watch in like, I don't know.
Yeah, just forward it or something like that.
Yeah.
And I would expect anyone who's capable of forwarding it to forward it, because we mentally block the stuff out very quickly.
Absolutely. See, it is an uphill battle to begin with, right? It is an uphill battle and it becomes even more so with every day. First of all, let's talk about the numbers, right? The number of people we need to communicate with is crazy in this country, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now you're competing with like n number of like sources. There is no dearth of content, right? So it really does put the onus on not just the government but also the people, whether it's direct communication coming from the government or if they're like enlisting on sort of outsourcing it to public sector
mm-hmm.
stakeholders like us who are working with the government to sort of create this pieces of content, to be really good, to oversimplify it honestly. If you have to capture someone's attention and if the information is that important that it must be communicated, it's integral to the functioning of the public healthcare, the primary healthcare system, that communications are effective, right? And that it reaches enough number of people, you just have to be good. It is an uphill battle, but I don't really see a way around it other than constantly evolving. So, for example, if you need to put content out on TikTok, we should, because that's where everybody's at.
Right.
We can't just say that we're going to put it on, on state television, or we're going to just keep it to YouTube, or we're going to put it on TV channels.
In the middle of ads.
People are not going to watch it. People are watching TikTok. So let's put it on TikTok and let's put it in a form that people will watch, right? So if tomorrow Reels becomes the next thing, let's put it on Reels. If tomorrow some third platform comes up, we have to put it on that in a way that makes sense to people and they will want to watch. So you really have to keep up with the times.
But the government is very slow to sort of like, you know, adapt and change
mm-hmm.
to these things. I also feel like, do you think that like we need more subtler forms of communication? Like we need to insert it, let's say, as a message in a movie. You know, like Toilet.
Right.
The movie that Akshay Kumar came out with. Had a very like nice and subtle way of communicating.
Correct.
A very important topic. And I feel like that movie in itself might have done a lot more in those 3 hours than, let's say, years of communication on why we need sanitation.
Absolutely. I think, like I said, so it's this, what you're mentioning, and it is absolutely true, right? That had a huge impact. And it's the same way that you do product placement in movies, right? You do sort of communicate. That's why cause-based film making is something that has become much more larger chunk of content creation and filmmaking over the last few years, right? So whether it was Toilet or Padman, or even like, you know, there was a movie called Dam Laga Ke Haisha, and there are so many, right? So that it, at the end of the day, I think it boils down to who's willing to tell the stories, right?
And maybe it's like because it had, you know, a popular Bollywood actor taking on a stigmatized issue and being very vocal about it.
Yeah. It does, because, you know, people are attracted to, and in a country like India, we idolize our celebrities, right? So, for example, when the polio campaign happened, like way back in the 90s and before that even, so people went to take the polio drops because Amitabh Bachchan told them to do it, right? And that was a genius move on in terms of the government and whoever else was involved in the decision, because that was what people, it was not because taking the polio drops was imperative for their child's health. It was because Amitabh Bachchan told them to do it. So similarly, right? But what I'm saying is that the Amitabh Bachchans and the Akshay Kumars and the everybody else of the world have to be willing to put their money and time behind it, right? So as long as there are people willing to tell those stories and who are putting in the money and the creative thought and willing to experiment and innovate, there are n number of ways in which you can communicate these messages, right? Like I said, whether it's through mainstream filmmaking and inserting messages in there, building entire like series on these, whether it's TikTok or Snapchat or YouTube, it still means that the people who are making things have to care, right? All of this stuff that we've discussed is all moot point.
Is it care there, or do you think it's just funding?
I think both ways. I mean, obviously funding is a very practical form of it, right? Because it is very difficult to get funding for these things, right? I mean, the government unfortunately has limited resources, right? In terms of how much they can allocate to this. And video costs money. That's the truth. Video is expensive. Even if you make it on a bare bones shoestring budget, one piece of video will cost 10 times what one poster will cost, right? Or one like written flyer will cost. Let's not take into account the number in terms of production, but video just costs money. And video is effective, but it costs money. So I think funding, like I said, which is why things like, you know, general awareness in terms of the investing population also matters. You have to take these causes to people and get them to care and get them to put money behind it and get them to sort of fund this whole ecosystem, because it's not just one thing, right? The money comes A, from the government, which is, let's say, a separate thing, right? If it's private sector NGOs or people, like you said, you know, film studios which are investing in these, that's an entirely different ballgame. There it becomes, you have to make people care to get them to open up their pockets and be willing to put money behind an idea.
Right. I want to talk a little bit about how we measure the impact of, you know, any IEC material that is being put out.
Mm-hmm.
What metrics do you use and how do you go about it?
So in my experience, right, there are different ways of measuring impact. Obviously, one of them is hard data and metrics. So for example, if you have video content that's being hosted on something, right, whether it's YouTube or whether it's some kind of other cloud interface, that will, that platform itself will be able to give you the analytics in terms of at least viewership, right, or how many people are watching it, what areas they're watching it in, are they rewatching it multiple times, those metrics
are they made. Sharing it,
are they sharing it, are they saving it, all of that, right? So you're able to measure the back-end metrics when it comes to these things. Now if it comes to, for example, videos that are used in trainings and classrooms for health workers, right, or if it's being shown to people who don't necessarily have smartphone or internet access in their homes, right, on a TV and during an event, during the village health day or whatever, there are ways to measure that as well. That's a more qualitative analysis of the impact of the communication. So for example, one way to do it is before you show the videos, right, and we have done these tests when it comes to pilots in Karnataka, you have a questionnaire, right, which is based on the audience's awareness of the facts and information and the messages you're conveying in the videos, right? So you have a questionnaire that you prepare, obviously in consultation with experts. So ideally, what are the questions which you would ask people who are watching this video, right? So you give them that questionnaire and they answer before they watch the video, right? And then once you're done, you give it some time, not necessarily immediately, maybe 1 week later, 2 weeks later, 2 months later, you come back with the same set of questions and you see if their responses are different, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and in 9 out of 10 cases, they are, right? There was something that they didn't know about at all, now they know about it, so they'll answer accordingly, right? There was something they had a misunderstanding or misconception of, and now they will have a different understanding in it, which is, demonstrated in the answer they give. So there are these ways of, so having like MCQ or even qualitative questions for like health workers or for the community, in which you just measure the impact of the communication on the person by testing their knowledge pre and post.
Right. Don't you often doubt whether that information or knowledge converts into action?
Absolutely. So I think at the end of the day, the idea is to change people's, like, you know, change systems, change behavior, and get them to actually follow up on they're talking about. I think it's something, obviously, if you are a stakeholder in the public health ecosystem, you can review that. You can actually see how many people are turning up to the hospital, how many people are actually following up on their, say, for example, IFA medication. And you can sort of measure whether it's being actionable or not. On the other hand, as a creator, you do have to leave a lot of it to good faith, right? You have to believe that you've done a good enough job for people to, you know, action on the base of what you've said and hope that that's what they do. You can, at the end of the day, only do the best job possible and, you know, with the most amount of information that you have gathered and for the audience in question. And after that, I do think it's a lot is left up to chance. But if you have done a good job, it is more likely than not that they will actually action on it.
What do you think is the future of IEC and government communication?
I think, honestly, there's also a lot of public players involved in this ecosystem now. If you look at it, NGOs also put out PSAs, independent creators. I actually, and this is a personal belief, I think it's important to take the burden of communicating everything and, like, you know, just caring about things like public health and just lift the burden from the government a bit, right? I'm not saying you can, you know, the government doesn't need to be involved. Of course they do. At the end of the day, this is under their umbrella. But it's important, for example, for the general public to also care and do their part. For example, what I mean is there are so many established YouTubers, TikTokers, people in all kinds of content space and from all kinds of backgrounds, right? From all kinds of regions, who speak different kinds of languages with different of age demographics, and they appeal to a huge cross-section of people, right? I feel that it's important as a country, if we really want to use communication for change, for people to get involved, right? So it is important for you, if you, for example, to give you an example, it's that if you are doing a podcast about public health, right? If tomorrow you choose to pick a regional language and do a podcast targeted completely towards, like, you know, people in rural areas and meant for them, and you bring people who they would connect to, right, who can speak to them, that's one way of doing it, right? Tomorrow, if I choose to sort of collaborate with, I know a celebrity who's popular in, like, Bengal, villages in Bengal, and I know he's going to be relevant to the audiences there, and I choose to do a YouTube series with them, which I know will be watched by the people in the state involved, and it will connect with them, resonate with them, then I need to put my time and my effort behind that, right, and make those things happen. So I think in a country like the size of India, it is difficult to effect any real change unless
everyone
stakeholders, yeah, unless everyone gets involved, right? So it is as much as it is the ownership of the government to also, by the way, foster these things, right, and allow these things and create that environment and help that environment to foster, you know, sort of flourish. The public needs to care and we need to get involved, and I think we need to, especially say post-COVID, I think it's very clear, and it should be clear rather to most of us, that the primary healthcare system is the backbone of this country, right? The public healthcare system for a developing country is honestly has far better parameters than a lot of countries which have more money in the bank when it comes to these things, right? So we need to respect that, and we need to respect that this is the only option of healthcare. Public health is the only option of healthcare for literally like millions of people, right? So we just have to care about that, and we have to put our money and our time where our mouth is and actually do something about it.
Wonderful. That's a great note to end our conversation on.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It was really fun to talk about these things, and like I said, quite enlightening for me also to sort of go back and think about why we did certain things. So thanks for having me.